Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Cold Hard Truth Podcast. I'm Jack Smith with a guest co-host today, MJ Newsom from Tailgate Talk College Football, a fellow USC student this year. I haven't gotten a whole ton of opportunity to watch college football as much as I really would like to in the past couple of years, especially focusing on NFL for the podcast. But MJ here is a college football, I don't know what you call him, a super fan. Over at Tailgate, he's working on something which I'm super excited to read. It's a 130 team preview for college football. So I figured who better to bring on the show to do our college football special episode this year. MJ, thanks for coming on.
Jack, thanks so much for having me, man. I can't wait.
Before we get into it, do you want to tell the viewers a little bit about yourself, a little bit what you do over at Tailgate Talk and what to expect from this 130 team preview?
Yeah, for sure, man. So I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. So down south, college football is a big thing. For me and for a lot of other people. So I started Tailgate Talk the summer before my senior year because I wanted to do sports journalism, sports broadcasting. And so wanted to get something, to kind of get me going, keep me occupied. So I started Tailgate Talk as a strictly college football blog and podcast. I write on tailgatetalk.org. And then I do podcasts that'll also be on tailgatetalk.org or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and pretty much anywhere you can find streaming stuff. But basically what I do is I'll write stories, have an Instagram, Tailgate Talk CFB, post stuff there, post breaking news, interview people on podcasts, do week in review podcasts. And so kind of to piggyback off what you were saying, Jack, I'm now working on my second season preview. Last year, didn't do a whole ton with it, just did like a little bit of conference snippets, but this year kind of wanted to go big. So doing all 130 teams, nothing crazy, just a little detail of them in each, but it's been a lot of fun. It's been a little long, but I've really enjoyed it. So that'll include, kind of an overview, kind of what happened in the off season, the preseason, all the conferences, all the teams, and you'll get some playoff predictions and Heisman race predictions and stuff like that. It'll be out this Saturday, August 28th on tailgatetalk.org. If you want to check it out, love for you to do it.
Yeah. Make sure you guys go check that out. And while you're at it, please consider hitting a like on this video if you enjoy it. Leave a comment down below with what you think of the episode. And make sure to subscribe if you're on YouTube or subscribe if you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and stuff like that. But MJ, I want to start with, there's kind of the three big dogs recently in college football. Alabama, your team from Birmingham, and we got Clemson and Ohio State. And they've run the college football playoff, it seems like, for the past 5-7 years. But this year, all three of those teams have to replace their quarterbacks, all went in the first round of the NFL draft last year. And they're hoping that they can, still compete and still be those top dogs. From your perspective of these three teams that are replacing quarterbacks, which quarterback do you like the most? Which team do you think can stay at the top and have the most success while, working through this big change?
So I'm going to say right now, I like Ohio State's situation the best, even though it's probably not the best of the situations. I think that CJ Stroud is a terrific quarterback, but I also think that Quinn Ewers would not be on campus if he didn't know something was up. I think he's got a chance, not to start this year, but I think he's going to play. I think CJ Stroud will play. And obviously being in the Big Ten as opposed to the ACC and the SEC, I think with the Ohio State situation, they're probably going to have more success because you look at North Carolina and the ACC should be really good this year with Sam Howell. And then you look at, Bama playing in the SEC West, it's just a little bit tougher. So I think that Ohio State situation is best for CJ Stroud, but I also think that I think he'll start, but I think Quinn Ewers definitely has a chance to play, but I feel most comfortable about that situation right now.
Yeah. I think that was a kind of a big telltale sign. Ewers, going to Ohio State early, it means you're right. I think he does know something. And also, just for Stroud in general, having Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson there, and of course, playing in that Ohio State offense, which has generated just so many great offensive prospects over the last couple of years, it should be a big move for him. And he's going to have a lot around him. But you can also definitely say the same things about those other quarterbacks, especially Bryce Young of Alabama. And while he's not going to have Devonta Smith and Jalen Waddle there, like Mac Jones did last year, there's still a ton of weapons. What do you think about him in that Bama situation?
Yeah, so I think it'll be really, really good for him. It's going to be kind of tough, obviously, coming in, having to fill the big shoes of Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa, and then Mac Jones, all potential three starters this year in the NFL. But I think Bryce is he's a different quarterback. He's not the same kind of quarterback that Tua and Mac are. He's sort of like Jalen, but he's got, in my opinion, better wheels than Jalen. And I think his ball is smoother. It's better. Now, of course, Jalen's gotten a lot better since he left Alabama and went to Oklahoma, not the Eagles. But I think Bryce is in a really good situation. He's got John Metchie, who's going to be a great receiver. Jahlil Billingsley, who's missed a few practices apparently on unnoticed, didn't tell coaches about it. So that situation might be up in the air. But if he's back, he's going to be a huge weapon, obviously. And yeah, definitely they're going to miss some weapons on the outside like Devontae and Waddle. But I think Metchie's really, really going to step up having a big year this year. And I think it might take Bryce, you know, a few games to get settled in. You know, didn't look like he was super comfortable last year when he came into the games. But in the spring, obviously didn't have the best of stats, but he showed a lot of flashes of a lot of talent, had a lot of good across body throws, rolling out, quick throws. He showed his mobility and stuff. So I really believe that Bryce Young's going to be pretty successful at Bama.
Do you think that they're going to have, you know, a successful plan in place to use him as like a running quarterback? Because that's something you're right, they had Jalen, but outside of him, who he was kind of in between that, they haven't really had a running quarterback like some of these other schools have. Like Deshaun Watson was a little bit more mobile than Jalen Hurts was, and Ohio State has had their run of the mill of running quarterbacks. Do you think Alabama is prepared to run an offense like that?
You know, I want to say they are, because I think, you know, Bill O'Brien coming with, you know, I know Anna's the OC at Bama, worked with Deshaun Watson for a little bit at the Texans, you know, very briefly. But, you know, I think Bama's done really, really good at adapting to who their quarterback's going to be. You know, you looked at it like way back when Greg McElroy, AJ McCarron, those were pocket passes strictly. And they did a really, really good job. Now, there was Jim McElwain was the OC there. And then when you get Lane Kiffin, he's going to pull in a different offense when he's working with Jake Coker, you know, a pocket passer, and then he gets to Jalen Hurts and completely sort of revamps the offense to allow him to run more. And you saw the same thing with Steve Sarkisian, allows Tua, Mac Jones to, you know, do the same thing, pocket pass. So I think Bill O'Brien coming with, you know, coming from Deshaun Watson's situation, you know, as you said, a super versatile quarterback, I think he's going to be able to really, you know, adapt and sort of build the offense around Bryce Young.
No, I think that's a great point. And obviously Deshaun Watson, up until all the stuff that has happened right now, and it's still not worked out, a super successful quarterback in the NFL, a super successful quarterback college, the main reason why Alabama has won less national title than they would have. But outside of that, those are the three top dogs recently, but Oklahoma is another one that's been a top dog, and they've got their quarterback returning, Spencer Rattler, many believe to be the best quarterback in college football, the best NFL draft prospect in the NCAA. What are your thoughts on Rattler, and what are your thoughts on Oklahoma?
I think Oklahoma is going to be really, really good. I don't want to spoil anything because obviously I want people to read my preview, but I think Oklahoma's got a chance to be great. I think Spencer Rattler is really, really good. And obviously having that year under his belt now as the starter in a weird year like COVID, obviously, you know, they started the year 1-2 and were basically effectively out of the playoff race at that point. So he was able to kind of not sit back and relax. That's not what I'm trying to say, but he was able to kind of try more things. And, you know, he has an absolute cannon and he can move a little bit too, which is nice. Marvin Mims on the outside is going to be really, really nice for him this year. Oklahoma, always the question mark is the defense. But I think Alex Grinch is doing a good job there as the DC, and I think he's going to get things turned around. You know, may not be this year, may not be next year, but I think Oklahoma's defense is, you know, going to start becoming existent, you know, as Big 12 defenses aren't really there. But I think Oklahoma and Spencer Rattler got a chance to be really good this year.
Well, their defense kind of got to shape up over these next couple of years, especially if they're thinking about joining the SEC, them and Texas. I read the article that you wrote about that, but I want to hear your thoughts on the podcast, complete thoughts about what you think of that move and maybe the cascading moves that it's going to kick into place.
Yeah, for sure. So there's a lot to think about in these kind of situations. So first and foremost, you know, I'm pretty happy with the way college football is right now. So I don't love there a bunch of changes going on. But at the same time, you sort of got to embrace it. You know, you're going to be witnessing history, just a total, you know, earthquake of madness going on, and everything's going to be reshaping and all this stuff. It's going to be great. You just got to kind of embrace it. And I think that Oklahoma and Texas are really making a bold move, especially look at Oklahoma. I mean, they're going to win the Big 12 9 out of 10 years if they stay in the Big 12. So you think, why move? But I think it's, you know, really bold move. Lincoln Riley, I think he knows he can succeed in the SEC, as I think they will. Texas, on the other hand, it's a perfect time for them to do it. You know, Sark just coming from Alabama as the OC, he knows the SEC. He knows how to coach in the SEC. So I think it'll be a nice move for him. And that's really, I think, going to hurt Texas A&M, truthfully, because even though Texas A&M has been better than Texas over the last, you know, 7-8 years, it's Texas. It's such a, you know, historic program. But I think – I like the move. I hope things don't start dominoing into, you know, total tailspin with other conferences, but I like this initial Oklahoma and Texas move.
You think Texas can compete?
I think it'll take a little bit, but I think they can. I think Texas, you know, I don't want to say Texas is bad because they're not, but they're getting better and better each year. You know, they've got a really good quarterback situation going on here. Steve Sarkisian said, you know, we wanted this to be hard on us, and it is hard. Both Casey Thompson and Harrison Card doing really, really good in camp, you know, has been reported by Sarkisian and some media people as well. So I think, you know, those are two young quarterbacks that can begin to take Texas into the next level. You know, if you're finishing in the top, you know, three of the Big 12 each year, you're going to keep attracting more and more recruits. And truthfully, I don't know how long Iowa State can keep up this run. Obviously, they have Brock Purdy and Breece Hall coming back this year, which are two key players for them. But once they leave after this year, you know, I just don't know if they'll still be, you know, the second best team in the Big 12. And so I think Texas can move right into that spot, and then them two in Oklahoma. And I think they'll be pretty equipped and prepared to go compete in the SEC.
Yeah, I think the piece that you talked about recruiting is really where this move becomes interesting, because Oklahoma and Texas are already juggernauts of recruiting. I mean, we see them, especially Oklahoma, just churning out top 10 classes recently. And you add being an SEC school into the mix, and you're going to have kids from across the country almost exclusively choosing SEC schools, going to Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Florida, and now Oklahoma and Texas. And of course, there's some that go to Auburn and Texas A&M. It's going to be pretty ridiculous. And I think that we're going to see the SEC be even more competitive in the future years than it even is now, which is kind of crazy considering, you know, the levels of talent, the level of competition that already exists in between conferences.
Yeah, I totally agree. And kind of to say what you just said, you know, you look at past recruits like Bryce Young, committed to USC, a hometown kid from modern day, flips to Bama. So you look at all these things where, you know, the S just means more in the SEC, kids coming from all over the place to play in the SEC.
Well, and then you throw in the fact that Bryce Young has maybe even made himself $1 million already before even really taking a snap as a starter for Alabama. That's going to change the landscape of college football. And recently that's what the NIL deals have been doing as well. I'd like to get your opinion on what you think about these new NIL rules, what you think it means for college football. Do you like it? Do you not like it? I'm kind of interested to know.
Yeah. So I got some mixed feelings on it. Initially I like it. I think it's necessary because I think, you know, you're not getting paid directly by the school, but you know, these kids they're big time celebrities. They're college kids, but they're big time celebrities. You have, you know, 100,000 people coming out just to watch them play, and they got jerseys, you know, video games, they used to be, and all these different things. I think it's time that they sort of got back sort of kind of what they're giving. And so I like the move, but the only thing I think that could go wrong in certain places is you look at example like Bryce Young making 7 figures already. You know, what about Joe Schmo on Alabama, who's not making anything? You know, that's going to start getting some locker room tension and some butting heads, you know, potentially. It's not obviously given, but I think it could create some bad chemistry within the teams, especially if you have like two, you know, competing teammates. You think about, you know, just for example, Casey Thompson and Hudson Card competing for the quarterback job at Texas. One makes more than the other, and you never know. Things could, that could just go sideways. But overall, I think it's a good move and a move that needed to be made.
That's why I've really enjoyed seeing what JT Daniels has been doing with all of his NIL deals. Making sure he's writing it into his contracts that his offensive linemen are involved and are getting part of the cut. That's this kind of the selfless thing that I hope that we see pop up more often when it comes to all of these deals. Because you're right, it definitely could cause some issues, especially if, yeah, you're saying Bryce Young's making 7 figures, his tight end, you know, to talk about Jaleel Billingsley, maybe he's not getting the money because of these couple of practices and Bryce Young's pulling up in a new car. And, you know, it's going to cause some issues, and I really hope that it gets fixed out. But I think right now it's safe to say that the college football landscape is in a very fragile spot, and that can go multiple ways. It could crumble, but also we could see something really, really cool start to build up with some new super conferences and these new NIL deals, and it could become even more interesting than college football already is. But moving over across the side of the country, the Pac-12 left out of the playoff last year again. And it's been left out for a lot of years. What do you think about the Pac-12 this year? I know we're both going to USC, so we might be a little bit biased, but what do you think of the Pac-12? Is there a chance for a playoff contender? in this division or in this conference. What do you think about them?
Yeah, so definitely the only caveat I'll say right now with the hill they got to overcome, USC and Oregon, obviously, in my opinion, are the two best teams in the conference. You look at Arizona State with Jaden Daniels. Obviously, they can make a big-time splash, but I just don't think they have quite the talent to keep up with these guys. But the only problem for USC and Oregon this year is you look at their out-of-conference schedule. You know, they should be fine in conference, but you look at Oregon having to go play at Ohio State, USC going to play at Notre Dame. Losses like that, in the committee's eyes, you know, it's a good loss, but it's still a loss. And that could really hurt them, especially look at Ohio State. I mean, there's not many games on their schedule that it's pretty clear they're going to lose. And so Oregon here ends up with one loss, wins the Pac-12, let's say. Now you're looking at Oklahoma, say winners of the Big 12, Bama, winners of the SEC, Ohio State, and Clemson. But Oregon's one loss might kick them out. Same with USC, obviously, having to play Notre Dame. Now, Notre Dame, to me, I've never really had too much faith in Notre Dame, even before coming to USC, obviously, the arch rival. But I always think that their schedule isn't legit. I know they play a lot of ACC teams, but they really don't play the tougher ones. And I feel like whenever the lights get bright, they can't perform. So I don't think Notre Dame's going to be a huge problem, but that's going to hurt USC if they do pick up a loss there.
Well, yeah, and especially with the Pac-12 playing one more conference game than all the other conferences, it just makes it so difficult because, of course, you have, you know, the Alabamas and the Clemsons of the world cleaning up against some cupcake schools, and it's kind of a free week. You get a breather, but all these Pac-12 teams, the conference games are all competitive, and they play – honestly, I'd say out of all the conferences, they play the hardest non-conference games of any conference. And the other two teams that USC is playing out of conference, BYU and San Jose State, both had winning records last year and both play tough. So you're right, it is kind of hard to overcome. And of course, being out of the media spotlight, playing the late night games, playing when no one else is watching, you get up and all you look at is the box score. And if you see, an Oregon State only won their kind of tough out of conference game by 7 points, although, you know, you'd watch the game and it's a whole different story. I think it's kind of tough to overcome that for a lot of Pac-12 teams, but I am excited about what a couple of the teams are doing. I like what USC's doing, what Oregon's doing. And outside of all this recruiting mayhem and all the mix-ups with staff with that Arizona State's having, I do like what they put out on a football field. So I hope this is the year that we see another Pac-12 team make it to the playoff, but honestly, we might have to wait till they expand the playoff to be able to think about that completely. And that's kind of where I wanted to go next. What's your opinion on the perfect blend of, you know, not having too little teams, not having too many, bringing in group of five schools into the college football playoff? What do you think is the most optimal format for this playoff?
I think you, at least first, you have to expand it. Four teams is not enough, and it's shown. I mean, you can't leave the UCFs, the Cincinnati's out. When they go undefeated, you can't, you know, punish them for playing a weaker schedule because they happen to be in a weaker conference. And you look at Texas and Oklahoma, they can't just snap, go to the SEC. So what do you know it would take if UCF and Cincinnati say wanted to get into the Big Ten or ACC? It's going to take time. So you can't punish them that way. I would think a pretty optimal field would be 12. I think 12 is then going to give the first top four teams, the teams that would initially be in the playoff, a bye. And then the other eight teams battle it out and get through there. I think you could also look at another scenario, which I sort of brainstormed last year, and it's expanding to 16. I think 16 might be a little bit too much, but I think the theory here is, and I think a lot of people wouldn't like this, and I don't think it ever would happen like this, but you get all 10 conference champions get an automatic bid there, and then you still have six at-large spots. So basically it's, you know, more than the playoff is now. That way I think it's fair for every team. Even, you know, your winner of the Mountain West or the Sun Belt, you know, teams that aren't exactly super strong. And it sort of works like the NCAA basketball tournament. You know, maybe you have to cut one regular season game out, but I think that's also a possibility. But if I were to go anywhere right now, I think 12 is the move. And I think that's what the committee is leaning towards as well.
I think what might be more likely than that is that you cut out the conference championship games and you kind of move from there. Because if you're already playing a conference championship game, when you're expecting that both teams are going to get into the playoff, it might be kind of tough. Because if there's a conference championship game and you got two SEC teams in there, both those SEC teams are going to take up one of the 16 spots. And I guess then you run into the problem of, well, who's the conference champion for the year? And it is kind of tough, but there's got to be one corner to cut. It's kind of right now, you got to sacrifice something. But I'd honestly rather sacrifice conference championships than all these teams missing out on the playoffs in the past couple of years. We saw TCU and we've seen UCF and Penn State like 2016 had a real shot. But since it's four teams, all these teams that are missing out, it kind of sucks to see, especially because with all the same teams being in the playoff every year, it gets to be the same story. And yeah, they're great teams, but who's to say that nothing would change if you threw in a fifth, a sixth, maybe even a seventh and eighth team in the playoffs?
I totally agree with that. You know, you definitely point to those teams that have missed out in the past. And, you know, the committee always says we're picking the four best teams. And, you know, I really believe when Penn State got left out, they were one of the four best teams. But they had two losses. And, you know, as much as you want to say the four best teams, two losses, it's just not going to get you there. In the eyes of the committee, it doesn't matter how good they think you are. They can't put you in with two losses when there's multiple undefeated teams or one loss teams. Unfortunately, that just doesn't work. But then if you expand it, you know, to however 6, 8, 12, 16, you're going to get that team in. And then you can finally see, oh, look, can they compete even with those two losses?
Yeah. And realistically, they don't put in the four best teams. It's the four best resumes. And so you get the best football teams at the end of the year because they slipped up early in the year. They just don't have a chance. I seriously believe in 2016, USC and Penn State, when they played in the Rose Bowl, they were two of the four best teams at that time. But of course, with the resume, with the early slip-ups, and with the losses, there was no chance they were going to make the playoffs. Totally and we agree. we saw how good that Rose Bowl football game was. And if that was a playoff game, just imagine how much more that would have meant for each program, for all of college football. So I think an expansion is definitely, I would assume, in the works. And I think a lot of college football fans would be pretty excited about that. But other things college football fans also get excited about is the Heisman race every year. I want to hear your thoughts about, you don't have to spoil your pick or anything like that, but a couple guys that you think are really in the mix and a couple dark horses as well that you really believe in.
Yeah, for sure. So let's start, obviously, with the most obvious one we've already talked about. Spencer Rattler. Spencer Rattler, he's going to have a big year at Oklahoma. He's going to be, you know, flinging the ball around left and right. He's got Marvin Mims on the outside, a terrific receiver. I really think he's going to have a great year. And I really think that at the end of the day, I think coming out of this draft class, he's going to be probably the highest rated quarterback and probably the one that's going to be taken first. Then you look at other people like DJ Ungulele at Clemson, Sam Howell as well at North Carolina. Those guys, those are their guys at Clemson, North Carolina. Those are the guys that are going to lead them do well. I think North Carolina is going to have a great season. I think Clemson is going to have a great season. It's really going to be built off of those two guys' success. And then you look at guys in the Pac-12, potentially like Keaton Slovis, maybe a bit of a dark horse. Jaden Daniels, maybe a bit of a dark horse. And then you even look at people on the defensive side. Kayvon Thibodeau, in my opinion, one of the best players in college football, if not the best player. So I think you have to look at guys like that. But you also have to look at guys who are going to be, you know, super important to their team, like Bryce Young. Not saying he'll win. He's a dark horse. But, I mean, I think Bama's success this year, at least offensively, is going to go how he goes. The running game is not going to be super strong this year. So you got to sort of look at a guy like him who's really going to have to take off and really play well to make Bama successful. And I think that's sort of what the Heisman sometimes comes down to, is who can lead their team the best and who can make their team the most successful. It's not necessarily who's the best overall player.
Yeah, and Sam Howell is one of the interesting names that you brought up, because talent-wise, he's up there with the Rattlers, the Uiagalelis, the Bryce Youngs, the Keaton Slovis, and he's had talent around him in the past, and he's done really well. But now, coming into his third year in this offense, he's losing Michael Carter. He's losing Javonte Williams. He's losing a whole lot in the receiver core. And so without those weapons around, do you still believe he can get it done?
I'll go ahead and say this. I'm a big believer in North Carolina this year. Ty Chandler, coming from Tennessee, is going to be a huge transfer for them this year. I think Sam Howell is very, very good at working with the weapons around him. UNC obviously is going to bring in not better than the guys they have, but some good receivers. Ty Chandler is going to be great out of the backfield, and I think he's very, very like an Alvin Kamara. He's very good at receiving out of the backfield, but can also get it done on the ground. Sam Howell can use his legs. He's not the biggest of guys, but he's got a cannon. I personally think he's the best player in the ACC. I'll go ahead and tell you that right now. Obviously, we haven't seen much of Ungulele right now. Only played that Notre Dame game and a few games here and there. But as of right now, I believe Sam Howell is the best player in the ACC.
And you don't have to spoil your prediction or anything like that, but does North Carolina have a shot at Clemson? You say they have the best player in the ACC. Do they have a chance to knock off the best team?
I really think they do. I think Clemson obviously comes into the year, you know, with the new quarterback. Obviously, we know he's good, but we just don't quite know yet. He hasn't played a stretch of three games in a row starting, and Sam Howell has. And he's shown what he can do. I think North Carolina has plenty of talent to do it. Obviously, Clemson lost a bit. They'll have plenty back because it's Clemson. But I think North Carolina does have a legit shot to knock off Clemson.
And I don't want to round it out without, or, you know, leaving out some group of five schools because they get neglected enough. And obviously the big ones this year coming into the year, we got Cincinnati. A lot of people really like Louisiana. Who are your sleeper dark horse teams outside of the Power Five that you're really high on this year?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. It's been something I've really been working on a lot through the preview, is really digging into these group of five teams. Obviously, Cincinnati, they're going to be really good. Desmond Ridder's a fantastic quarterback. Cincinnati, easily the favorite in the American this year. I think they'll fare well, and I'll go ahead and say it. I think Cincinnati's going to win the American this year. One thing that I have learned, so I don't know if anyone listened to my podcast, probably not through at least your connection here, but in my podcast last year, quarterback from Houston Baptist, his name is Bailey Zappe, played four games last year, Houston Baptist did, all against FBS opponents, and he went off. He threw for like 500 yards a game, six touchdowns. It was incredible. So doing my research, he is now at Western Kentucky. He has brought three receivers and his offensive coordinator with him to Western Kentucky. It's either offensive coordinator or quarterback coach, someone who's very connected to him at Houston Baptist. And I think Western Kentucky is going to be really good this year. I think Bailey Zappe is going to have a fantastic year. He's a name that really nobody knows, but I was super excited to find him. Another guy that I think is going to be really, really good is Grayson McCall at Coastal Carolina. He showed what he's capable of last year as a redshirt freshman, and I think he's going to be even better this year. You know, I think Coastal Carolina, them and Louisiana are the two top teams in the Sun Belt, but I think Coastal Carolina, they've just got more firepower, and I think Grayson McCall is really going to carry them, you know, to a great record and great season, and I think he's going to have a fantastic year.
Through doing your research, have you found players that you think are going to be a much, much bigger NFL draft prospects than are being talked about right now? Obviously, there's all the big dogs that are in these draft previews that are probably way too early, but are there any kind of dark horse sleeper guys that you've really picked up on that you think could have a big year this year and launch themselves into being a bigger prospect in this draft?
You know, I think Jaden Daniels at Arizona State is probably, in my opinion, the biggest one. Obviously, he doesn't fit that NFL persona that a lot of quarterbacks do, that pocket pass pro-style quarterback. You look at him more as like a Lamar Jackson. Obviously, Lamar has had plenty of success in the NFL. But I think people really value him as a college quarterback, but I think he's really going to do some special things at Arizona State this year, and I think he's really going to garner some national attention. And then you look at guys who are like super high on the draft prospect board, but I think could go even higher. Like Derek Stingley from LSU, I personally think he's one of the best players in college football. Last year, I thought the same thing. He had a fantastic freshman year, and I really think that, you know, if he plays well and does a lot well, I don't see a reason why he couldn't go top three, if not the top pick. I know it's going to be a good quarterback class coming up, but I really think that Derek Stingley is a fantastic player. Same with Kayvon Thibodeau. You know, Kayvon Thibodeau, probably a top five pick projected right now, but I think with a big year, he could really propel himself up there. A lot of defensive players that I think could really make a splash.
Well, I think that's kind of all we had today before we wrap it up. Is there anything else that you're really excited to talk about college football this season? Anything the viewers need to know that you want to kind of rattle off before we end this episode?
I think it's going to be a fun year. You know, we finally get full season stadiums back. It's what we're used to and not like last year. You know, you have these ACC and Big Ten rules now that, you know, if a team has COVID issues, they got to forfeit. And I honestly think at this point, that's what we got to go to, because we can't be waiting around and changing rules for Ohio State last year. I think that was kind of dumb for the Big Ten to do that, because they said here and there, like, clear, you don't play six games, you can't play in the conference championship. And of course they amend that to allow Ohio State in, ended up not working out well for them in the end in the national championship. But I'm excited just to have a full season back and really see, you know, how teams can go. Because you look at some teams that, you know, like LSU didn't have a great season last year because of this COVID thing. You know, obviously they were minus Joe Burrow and Joe Brady, but now you got Max Johnson, a full year of experience. And, you know, he's not the best of quarterbacks, but he's going to be really, really important to LSU success. So teams like that who didn't have his, you know, the best year they could have because of the pandemic, now having everything back, all their players back, all these safety protocols in place, a lot better chance to succeed.
Yeah, well, I think you said that perfectly. And you're right. There are a lot of those teams. And you can even say Oklahoma is one of those teams. They, of course, losing early in the year, Rattler kind of getting acquitted. And they ended up just beating the brakes off Florida in their last game. So the sky's the limit for a lot of these teams, LSU and a lot of other ones that we didn't get to mention. Make sure you guys go check out MJ's page. Check out that 130 team preview. I know I will be to get brushed up on for this college football season. I'm not sure there's going to be very much more that you will want to see for the college football season than that preview. Make sure you go follow him on Instagram and his website. We'll leave it all down in the description. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. Thank you so much, MJ, for coming on. We'll be the Cold Hard Truth Podcast, and we will see you next time.